The world sure looks rosy through the lens of someone in love, especially at this time of year, with the abundance of hearts, roses, and chocolates reminding us that life is much sweeter when shared with someone else. Love is intoxicating. It's mind-altering, soul-changing. Love makes the world go round. But when love ends, it not only hurts us to the core, it disrupts our life as we know it and alters the lens through which we view the world. That once sunny landscape becomes awfully dark and dismal when the light of love goes away. And the reality of heartache, the physical and psychological toll it takes, is often much more devastating than we ever imagined. I'm marriage and family therapist Elizabeth Barrett, licensed practitioner, wife, mother, educator, and love supporter. And this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, my monthly musings about the current state of our collective mental health, and a look at how our efforts are either aiding or getting in the way of our own well-being. I've been navigating a sea of tears and turbulent emotions lately. Part of it comes with my role as a therapist, but outside of my work life, it seems as if a wave of breakups has swept through my personal world as well. These breakups range from the end of a high school romance to the end of a long-term marriage. And some of the endings were mutual decisions. Others were unexpected, but not terribly shocking. And some were just nasty. But despite the variety of issues and details that led to these breakups, what they all have in common is the emotional and physical toll breakups have on the individuals. The feelings involved in giving our heart to another and losing that love are as painful and real for someone 15 as they are for someone who's 65. I have held the hand and rubbed the back of weeping teens, successful men, and beautiful women, all suffering gut-wrenching despair, wishing they could just go to sleep until it all goes away. Their misery is palpable. And sometimes in life, we just can't avoid misery, no matter how smart, funny, strong, giving, interesting, or gorgeous we are. Heartache doesn't discriminate. It can hit anyone who feels. And sometimes it even afflicts those who believe they've never felt anything at all. Marriage and family therapists are trained relationship experts. That's one of our professional missions, to help our clients to enhance, improve, heal, and maintain interpersonal relationships. But we don't often get the chance to work with and help strengthen relationships that are going well, which makes sense. Why would we take the time to fix something that isn't broken? Unfortunately, when things start to go badly, couples often wait too long to get help, and by the time they make it into my office, the relationship is broken. And for some couples, there isn't a superglue available that can put it all back together. And although I spend most of my time talking about the ways that we can nurture, save, and enhance our primary relationships, even I have to admit, when a relationship has passed the point of no return, even with our best efforts, some breakups are inevitable. And just as we must grieve the loss after a physical death, we grieve in similar ways the death of love in our life. We move through the same stages of grief, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and eventually acceptance. Not necessarily in that order. We can bounce back and forth and keep returning to one stage or another, but most people experience each stage in some form, usually beginning with denial that the breakup is even happening. The mind races, it becomes difficult to concentrate, eat, or sleep, and the crying ensues. Along the way, bargaining begins. You imagine ways you could have fixed the relationship, avoided the breakup, said just the right thing to bring your lover back. You replay your last moments together over and over. You make deals with yourself. I'll lose weight and he'll want me back. I won't drink this weekend and she'll see that I've changed. Bargaining with oneself is a futile exercise the brain practices to ease the suffering and attempt to regain some sense of control. When the denial, anger, and bargaining get us nowhere, we begin to sink into feelings of depression. A sense of heaviness and reality of the loss come to rest on our heart and our brain. it continues to be difficult to eat, drink, or sleep. Or you may be eating, drinking, and sleeping too much, and of course, the crying continues. But eventually, with enough support, love, time, and care, acceptance finally sneaks in. Maybe not happiness, but a sad acceptance that things will never be the same, and the time has come to move on, move forward, rebuild. In our subconscious mind, some level of acceptance is there right at the beginning, often before the breakup officially happens. On some level, we always know when things aren't right, but bringing those feelings to our waking lives is often too painful to face until it becomes unavoidable. Even if the breakup is for the better, the work of redefining who we are without the other person is a daunting process and can be one of the reasons that couples tend to return to each other many times before they finally really call it quits. And it's not just the emotional attachment that causes us pain during a breakup. There is the actual physical pain to contend with. When we talk about feeling heartache, there can actually be notable changes in the size and functioning of the heart in response to the stress during a breakup that can be confused with other medical conditions. And the same hormones released by the brain that help create the bonds and excitement in a relationship cause the body to experience strong physical withdrawal after the connection ends. Part of what we feel when we describe falling in love is the release of serotonin, adrenaline, and dopamine into our bloodstream. And along with each orgasm, the body releases vasopressin and the cuddle hormone oxytocin, the same hormone released when a woman nurses a child, both of which have a bonding effect on the couple. And these are all powerful chemicals, and when we experience a breakup, we suffer through physical withdrawals from these hormones. The withdrawal is likened to coming off of cocaine or heroin addiction. The body becomes addicted to and craves the chemical love cocktail and the great feelings that come along with hugging, kissing, sex, and just being together. Even if we stop consciously recognizing the connection, the physical connection is deeply rooted in our subconscious. So in order to regain chemical and emotional balance, the brain and body need time to reset, to find a new normal, find a new outlet for passion, and a new way to replicate the highs of love. When my oldest daughter ended her 4-year first love relationship, the journey to wholeness became more than she bargained for. Even though she'd initiated the break, she was devastated by the sense of sadness and loss which accompanied the breakup. And after spending a good part of the summer watching episodes of 6 Feet Under on the computer in her room, it was time to take action. And although I would love to tell you that it was my years of training and experience that were the keys to her recovery, it was actually a book. A funny, sarcastic, and cleverly written paperback that was the Bible in which she found relationship salvation. The book is titled, It's Called a Breakup Because It's Broken. And it's filled with nuggets of painful truth, cringeworthy humor, and plenty of best girl or guy friend advice, including 7 commandments for getting over a breakup. And although it's not a replacement for therapy, which is still, I believe, the most effective way to heal from relational devastation, it's called a breakup because it's broken might be a good way to start the ball rolling. So here are the 7 commandments. 1, which may be the hardest, but it's also the most important of all. Don't see or have contact with him or her for 60 days. That might seem impossible or extreme, but it's an essential part of detoxing from the relationship. You actually need 60 days to break the habit of being with him or her. And from a scientific perspective, this might be the amount of time it takes to rewire your brain, to withdraw from the love hormones connecting the two of you, to remove yourself from his or her hemisphere to give your brain and body time to create a new reality, to get reintroduced to yourself, and to prevent, as much as possible, all of the crazy behavior that seems to accompany a split, like cyberstalking or excessive phone calls and begging and pleading. Even if you're parting as friends, it's important to observe the 60-day rule to cement the break. Commandment number 2, get yourself a breakup buddy, someone you can trust to hold you to the 60-day rule and who is patient enough to hear your story over and over again, but strong enough to tell you when it's time to pull it together. Think 12-step sponsor. From a therapeutic perspective, it's important to reach out and ask for help because some things are just too hard to do alone. Like commandment number 3, get rid of his or her stuff and all of the things that remind you of him or her. Box up the memories and store them with someone else. And then rearrange your room, rearrange your life, repaint, move furniture, start a new routine. This relates to the importance of changing your day-to-day to help rewire your brain and disconnect you from your ex. And one great way of changing your routine is commandment number 4. Get your rear in motion every day. And that speaks for itself. Exercise increases the release of serotonin and dopamine, elevates our mood, and helps alleviate depression. It also helps to fill the time that feels endless when we're grieving and starts to rebuild confidence. So move every day. And respect commandment number 5. Don't wear your breakup into the world, literally or figuratively. The rule of thumb, never leave the house wearing something you wouldn't want to see your ex in. I love that. You don't have to wear a ball gown to the grocery store, but your crusty dog walking sweats will do nothing to elevate your mood. And just as important, keep your crying and story sharing out of the office, out of the gym, and away from strangers. Save that for your closest friends and the privacy of your home. Because although you may not believe it now, you will recover, and you'll want to be able to go out and hold your head up high when you re-enter the world. And to hasten your recovery, observe commandment number 6, no backsliding. As tempting as it may be, healing takes long enough, and starting over is exhausting. So stay the course and practice commandment number 7, which really should be a life mantra anyway. Be your own number 1. It's easy to forget all of the ways that we are lovable after a breakup. So an important part of the healing is to reclaim and embrace the unique beauty and essence of yourself. Getting reacquainted to your best friend, yourself, may be the greatest gift you ultimately receive after a breakup. It's called a breakup because it's broken is a wonderful resource for healing. But it might take a few read-throughs before you're actually ready to take action. And if you're offering support to someone else, they might not be ready to read the book right away and might be angered by some of the suggestions, but they will get there with enough love and support. And along the way toward healing, be your own Valentine. Spoil yourself with hearts and flowers. Indulge in massage, chocolate, strawberries, exercise, and laughter, all of which release many of the same love chemicals and feelings of pleasure associated with your relationship. And give yourself grace. We all have our own grief timeline, and it's difficult to determine how long it will take someone to find peace after a breakup. The crying will subside for a while, and then something might happen to trigger the grief all over again. There will be setbacks, but they will become fewer and farther between. But if the grief becomes suicidal or after several months prevents you from functioning at even the most basic of levels, it's probably time to seek help from a trained and competent professional. I wish you the best along your journey to renewed wholeness and gratitude to those of you helping to ease the pain for someone else who's grieving. This has been another conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Please join me again next month at the same time, the first Wednesday at 4:15. Until then, you can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org under the Program Archives tab. Thank you for listening and supporting Public Radio KCBX.